The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you after kind of an up and down week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They went 3-3, an exciting start to the week for sure, with 2 out of 3 at Wrigley Field against the Cubs. They pull within a game of first place in the NL Central. But as we record at the end of the week, the Brewers go into Monday 2.5 behind the Cubs for the Central. They lost some ground after losing 2 of 3 against the Pirates, snapped a streak of 7 straight series victories. But things are still looking really promising. It's just maybe not quite as promising as it did midweek. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel podcast. We're going to be doing a few things on today's show. Going to be joined by Todd Rosiak, Brewers Journal Sentinel beat reporter, and we're going to ask him a few questions about the team, where they stand, talk a lot about the playoffs, because right now the Brewers, they're at the risk of jinxing it here, guys. They're going to the playoffs. They're in really, really good shape. Now, they're in good shape to make the playoffs, not necessarily in great shape to get an ideal situation. For one thing, they're, like I said, 2.5 games behind the Chicago Cubs for the Central Division crown, which of course means they would be able to avoid that one-game wildcard game on October 2nd. Winner goes on, loser stays home after a mere single playoff game. Right now, it's looking like that is the Brewers' destiny, but they could potentially still catch the Cubs. The other part of it is they want to hold off the NL West team or the Cardinals that could potentially steal away that spot or the home field advantage for that game. Right now, the Brewers are sitting pretty comfortably in charge of a spot that would give them home field advantage for that wild card game. But of course, there are still 2 weeks of baseball to go before we get to the postseason. So the Brewers are it's an interesting time to be a Brewers fan. Always a little nail biting involved, but like I said, Brewers in good shape. It's just a matter of how good of shape they're going to be at the end of the year. But after we talked to Todd, I sat down with Kurt Hoge, my colleague. We spoke to him a few weeks ago when we were looking back at the 2008 Brewers team. Now, I had a conversation with him about MVP because even though the Pirates series might have taken a little bit of luster off this conversation, the debate would be whether or not the Brewers have a realistic MVP shot with either Christian Yelich or Lorenzo Cain. Kurt and I disagree about which player should get the spotlight if we had to choose one. We talk about, I guess, or how we would rank maybe the 5 best players on the Brewers this year, the 5 most valuable players that the Brewers have had this year. It's a tough task. It's hard to pick top 5 because there have been a lot of people who've contributed a great deal to the success of the 2018 Milwaukee Brewers. So we had a little conversation about MVP, whether we think it's realistic for a Brewer player to get it, or which one would be sort of the favorite there. My personal pick, Christian Yelich, who hit home run number 30 over the weekend, having a sensational season. Kurt favoring a little bit more on the Lorenzo Cain side. So you can hear our debate after that. Then have a brief interview, about 8 minutes, with Brandon Woodruff, Brewers relief pitcher, who has you know, delivered some good innings here in September. He's been up and down quite a bit all season playing. He was kind of pegged as a starter at one point, sort of ended up evolving into just a bullpen relief role. He's still an up-and-coming guy, could very much play a big role on this team and certainly the teams going forward. It'd be interesting to see where he'll stand in the rotation hunt in 2019 and beyond. But talked to him about a bunch of things. His brother was killed, actually, 2 years ago in 2016 in an ATV accident, which was obviously a big moment, terrible moment in Brandon Woodruff's life. And he came back. He first came back as he's pitching, but he also hit a home run in his first game in the minors back in Mississippi, in Biloxi, as sort of a cool accent to that otherwise very disheartening time, sad time in his life. And now he's in the big leagues, and he talked very openly about that and a few other things. So enjoy chatting with him. But before we get to those conversations, let's join the one and only Todd Rosiak. He is the sunshine of the Milwaukee Brewers beat. Todd Rosiak joining me now on the other line. How are you, sir?
Lovely. How are you?
You are lovely, Todd. I want you to know that you are lovely.
Thank you.
Todd has been watching the Milwaukee Brewers get 3 wins and 6 tries this week, a kind of an up and down week, 2-3 against the Cubs, then lost 2-3 against the Pirates. But it's becoming clear, at least to me, that this team is going to go to the playoffs. They are absolutely well situated to do so. Very good playoff odds. But the playoff odds of winning the division, probably less than 20% at this point. Do you think there's still a chance they could catch the Cubs? I mean, I know 2.5 isn't a huge gulf, but it seems like a pretty big ask at this point for the Brewers to catch Chicago.
It does. I think everybody's, you know, if you're a fan, your hopes are pretty high after the Brewers took 2-3 there last week. To me, kind of the turning point of the whole deal was, you know, I think most people expected the Cubs to go into Washington on that makeup day last Thursday and roll over. And, you know, they go to extra innings, they lose Pedro Strop, but win the game and then go on to win 2-3 against the Reds here over the weekend. I just feel like, you know, their experience, their talent is just going to push them over the edge and just be able to keep the Brewers at bay here. If you look at their schedule moving forward, you know, they go, they're in Arizona Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they conclude their road swing with 3 at the White Sox, so they're back in town. And then they close out with 7 home games. Now, none of those will be easy, 4 against the Pirates, 3 against the Cardinals, but I think that schedule's pretty favorable in their eyes and manageable. So I guess all they really need to do is hold serve. And, you know, you look at what the Brewers have coming up here. You know, obviously they've had their trouble with the Pirates. They go back there this coming weekend now, and they've got 3 against the Reds starting tomorrow at Miller Park. And as we all know, the Reds are, you know, they're certainly capable offensively. So the Brewers, the rest of their schedule, save for those 3 games against the Tigers at home to close out the season. After the Pittsburgh series, they go to St. Louis. We all know the Brewers have troubles with the Cardinals. So I just, the way it shakes out, both schedules, the way both teams are playing, I think the wild card is the obvious and most realistic shot right now for the Brewers to get into the playoffs.
So let's say that's their destiny, and there's really 3 teams they could play at this point: the Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Rockies. All 3 of those teams have a guy that I think you could consider kind of pretty close to an ace. Certainly Clayton Kershaw, Kyle Freeland of Colorado, maybe I guess Jack Flaherty and Miles Mikolas probably are both pretty tough starting pitchers that the Cardinals possess. Does one of those 3 teams strike you as a particular matchup that the Brewers would have the best chance against, or does one, or it kind of doesn't matter, I guess, at that point? They've just got to get in.
All right. Well, if we're assuming that the Brewers are at home, you know, I mean, that's obviously the assumption at this point, if we're talking about this. To me, the one team that you don't want to play if you're the Brewers is the Dodgers, you know, for 2 reasons. Number 1, the Kershaw factor. And number 2, just the overall crazy talent that the Dodgers have. You know, of course, they're capable of laying an egg like any team. But, you know, the Brewers certainly saw the bad side of the Dodgers in those last 2 games in L.A. Early in August. I don't think anybody's going to forget that 21-5 game, especially. You know, they've got thump up and down the lineup and some great talent. So, to me, the Dodgers are the one team that you want to stay away from. You're playing at Miller Park. Obviously, the Rockies have a tremendously good offense. The pitching, to me, isn't quite as scary. Looking at the Cardinals, obviously the familiarity is there. The Cardinals certainly wouldn't be intimidated coming to Milwaukee to play that game. They've won there consistently at Miller Park over the seasons here in recent years. You know, Mikolas obviously has had a good season. Flaherty, you mentioned those guys, but you know, the familiarity can work to the Brewers' advantage as well. So. To me, it would kind of be a toss up between the Rockies and the Cardinals. I just would not want to play the Dodgers if I had my druthers, if I were, you know, working for the Brewers or were a Brewer fan.
The Brewers switched up their rotation a little bit to get Yuli Chacin lined up for that October 2nd wild card game. He's been the guy that I think everybody has understood is the guy you'd want in that situation, but he has struggled a little bit lately, and more than that, starting pitchers have not worked by design deep into games. Pretty much they're leaving in the fourth or fifth inning. I mean, is there no question in your mind that it's going to be Chacin in that spot, or is there still some open-mindedness? Obviously, if they're fighting for their playoff life or something, and that's going to all change. But if the Brewers have their druthers, is that still the guy for the wild card game?
Yeah, he's the guy. You just go by what he's done over the course of the season. I think I would argue with your statement that he's struggled lately. He hasn't really struggled. I don't think he's been given a very long leash at this point. You know, you mentioned that he's only pitching, you know, basically 75 pitches, five innings. With a 14-man bullpen, you can afford to do that if you're Craig Counsell. Certainly did not pitch well poorly, I should say, against the Pirates today. Give up a couple runs. There was just no offense against Trevor Williams on the other end from the Brewers' perspective. But, you know, Chacin's been around. He's pitched in big games. He has not pitched in the playoffs, but, you know, he's been an innings eater. He's been a horse. When he's on and he's got that slider working for him, he's really, really tough on hitters. And he hasn't been that dominant Chacin that we saw, you know, late July and August, but it's certainly in there. And I think he's the guy, pretty much a no-brainer. I think people would probably be a little bit nervous if you start talking about Chase Anderson, just based on the, you know, the home runs that he's given up this year and the tendency to have tough first innings. You know, Wade Miley's got some experience, but, you know, he's only done it over really a short amount of time this season with all the time he missed with injuries. You know, to me, those would be the three real, you know, kind of obvious guys that you'd be talking about there. So, you know, Chacin's the guy. We've talked to him several times here in the last few days, and he's ready and willing to do it. You know, looking forward to it. He made no bones about it that signing with the Brewers in the offseason, he wanted to pitch meaningful games in September and October, and it looks like he's going to get his opportunity here coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Curtis Granderson, one of the team's pickups for September, had a great day against the Cubs to help the Brewers win the series on Wednesday. Are you, I mean, does that surprise you how consistent he's been? And I got to wonder if he's going to make this playoff roster. There's going to be a crowded outfield, obviously Braun Yelich and Kane, this is a little different for the wild card roster is only going to really need one starting pitcher. So there's going to be more bats on that roster than if they advance, what would happen after that. So I'm asking mostly for if they get into a full playoff series. You've also got Broxton, Thames, Santana. It's kind of hard to figure out which outfielders are going to be there in the playoffs. What do you think is Granderson's role? I mean, it seems like he's going to be on that team.
Oh, 100% he'd be on any playoff roster in my eyes. I mean, just in the short amount of time he's been on the team, he's affected it positively both on the field and in the clubhouse. And to me, on a team that doesn't have a ton of postseason, you know, players with postseason experience, I think you've got to have those guys around and in the lineup and in the dugout as much as possible in those situations. And Granderson is, you know, certainly not going to shrink from a big stage. He's played in huge games, played in three World Series. You know, he's been there, he's done it all. And like I said earlier, he's performed as well. You know, I mean, he turned that game around in Chicago last week. He's a guy you can plug in at the top of the lineup if you want to start him. Left-handed bat, he's got power. He's certainly a capable defender. He can steal a base for you if need be. He's a great guy to bring off the bench as a pinch hitter. So, you know, to me, the Brewers made that move to pick up Curtis Granderson, obviously to try to bolster their shot at getting into the postseason, but with an eye on the postseason, thinking this is a guy that really can help us, maybe take that next step.
You did a Q&A with Granderson last week, and I'm going to have a podcast interview with him for the next episode, next Sunday's episode. He's as everyone kind of can attest, he's an awesome guy to talk to. One of the coolest, easygoing, just best baseball interviews you can have too, on top of all of everything you just described.
My 8 years, not to cut you off, JR, my 8 years of covering the Brewers, easily top five, if not top one or two guys I've ever dealt with. Just as professional as the day is long, friendly, well-spoken, intelligent, amazing guy. And, you know, Tom and I always joke about chipping in money to bring guys back, you know, to deal with in the coming years. And both he and Gio Gonzalez would be at the top of that list for both of us, I think, bringing him back next year at least.
Yeah, interesting intersection. When that Pirates game where Gio Gonzalez pitched, you saw Chris Archer, a pitcher that a lot of fans wanted the Brewers to go after, and then the Pirates made the major play to get him. And yet Archer has been, he's been okay, but Gio Gonzalez now, he didn't get the win in that outing, but the Brewers have won both of Gonzalez's starts, and sort of just an interesting intersection going back to the deadline. What's being said, if anything, about Orlando Arcia seemingly finding it at the plate? You know, he's not a world beater, but he's been much, much better than he was earlier in the year. And as good as he is defensively, that's obviously one more guy you can now count on in the offense for the Brewers.
Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been a ton of talk as just based on, you know, hey, this guy's turned it around or anything like that. I think at this point, the Brewers are just going to settle for take what they can get from him with the bat. And there's good and there's bad. You know, I mean, he's going to have those at bats and those games where he just swings wildly at pretty much anything around the plate and goes up there seeming like he doesn't have much of an approach. And then he has a game like Friday night where he turns the game around with a couple of really nice at bats. The one that he hit off of Archer's butt, and then the push bunt down the right field line for a double, two RBI push bunt double. When have we seen that before? You know, a play that really took everybody by surprise. Not only, you know, the way it turned out, but just the baseball IQ that it took there for him to recognize the situation, see what the defense was presenting and do it. You know, Craig Counsell said he did not have a bunt call on in that situation. So that was all Arcia at that point. So, you know, he's a guy too, that for as young as he is, the size of the moment doesn't seem to bother him. And he seems like a guy to me that in crunch time in the postseason, I don't think he would shrink away from the spotlight. I don't think he would be nervous in a big situation at the plate. So, you know, to me, I think he's a guy that certainly you need to have on the roster, like you said, for defensive purposes, but it would not surprise me at some point, you know, if let's say the Brewers win the wild card game and then get into the next round, the divisional round, would not surprise me if Orlando Arcia had a big hit or two in the divisional series as well.
Yeah, I definitely put Arcia and Eric Kratz at the top of my list of, and I made this joke with somebody else, the Unieski Betancourt Award for big postseason moment. I feel like one of those guys could wind up in a big spot in a playoff moment for the Brewers. Going back to another guy who I want to ask about is sort of the playoff outlook, Junior Guerra. He had a really nice day Saturday working out of the bullpen, kind of saved their arms a little bit. I'm interested kind of in what comes next for Guerra, maybe for this year, but also for next year. It's going to be a crowded rotation picture, and he's had his ups and downs, but a lot of ups. You know, he's been a pretty reliable guy most of the time, hit the skids lately and wasn't able to stay in the rotation. But what do you think comes next for Junior Guerra?
I like that term, hit the skids. We need to use that more.
Noted. I will use it on the next podcast for sure.
It's good. It's a good one. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because he did have an interesting season. He was one of the team's two best starting pitchers for 3 months, basically.
No doubt.
And then kind of the floor fell out from under him, and he really struggled from basically, you know, end of July, early August through the point where he was pulled out of the rotation. You know, he's got good stuff. He's got some experience now. He's shown he can do it in doses, but, you know, what happened there? We never really had any answers. We never really found out, you know, what changed for him all of a sudden, because he went from really good to really bad in a short amount of time. You know, it remains to be seen, you know, does he have a spot on a postseason roster? Possibly. You know, he could be one of those, you know, early inning guys out of the bullpen. They obviously are going to have some other choices there. They've got some pretty good arms, and it depends on what you want from series to series. You know, you might want something different from the wild card game to the divisional series, et cetera, if they make it that far again. But future for Junior Guerra, I would fully expect him to be back again next year and competing for a spot in the rotation. They're going to have a number of arms at that point, young guys, older guys. And of course, we don't know what they're looking at in the offseason either, you know, who they're going to bring in as well. But he's one of a wealth of choices, one of a number of guys that I'm sure will throw their hat into the ring and see if they can come up with one of those five spots when all is said and done after Cactus League play.
The Biloxi Shuckers went to the championship in the Southern League. They did not win, but Keston Hira wrapped up his impressive season. He's still the Brewers' best prospect, kind of by far, I think. Maybe Corey Ray, the minor league player of the year, has something to say about that, or Zach Brown.
Did you just say kind of by far?
I think he's the number one guy in this organization by far, yes.
Okay. So no, that's not kind of. It's just by far.
Well, you know, I was sort of... Yes. Okay.
You're hedging your bets. I know what you're doing.
That's not exactly what I was doing. I was saying, yes, you're right. Anyway, let's say Jonathan Scope is on this team next year and struggles, or Travis Shaw doesn't stick as a second baseman, whatever they decide to do at second base. Could we see Keston Hira next year, or is that just ridiculously too early for him?
Yeah, I think that's pushing it a little bit. I mean, never say never. I mean, if you'll remember, there were people who were saying coming out of spring training, oh, you should be on the roster, and oh, this guy's better than what they have. And, well, you got to be realistic. I mean, how many position players move through a system that fast, come to the major leagues and experience success, who can step in and contribute on a day-to-day basis? It doesn't happen. And if you look at his season, the season he'd had this year in the minor leagues, it was kind of a tale of two halves. Terrific with Carolina, high A, went to Biloxi, got off to a really good start, and then we really didn't hear much more about him the rest of the season. That's not to say that he had a bad season overall, because he had what I would definitely consider a productive season, but the bat definitely cooled off, and I don't think it's any surprise when you're facing the step up in pitching that he did in the Southern League compared to the Carolina League. It made a difference, and he certainly needs more seasoning. Obviously, his bat is I would say far ahead of his glove at this point. I think the Brewers would like to see him kind of round out his game in the minor league still. So it would not surprise me a bit if they started him next year at Double A again in Biloxi, let him get his feet under him, kind of like they did with him at Carolina this year. Let him play 6 weeks there and then bump him up to Triple A if he's doing well. And you go from there. Who knows? Maybe a September call-up would be in the cards. But I just don't see Hira playing any sort of significant role at the major league level probably until 2020 would be my guess.
All right. Before I let you go, the last question here. What's coming up next for you? What are you working on? What's in the hopper for Todd Rosiak?
Well, you mentioned Keston Hira, and that's one of the guys who will be. I'll be taking a look at. I'm going to be doing a kind of a wrap up of the top 10 prospects in the Brewers organization, according to the Journal Sentinel, the Journal Sentinel's top 10 prospects, and just kind of do a number by number, you know, a list look at each of these guys, starting with Keston Hira and Corbin Burns. Even though he's in the majors now, he still is technically a prospect. Corey Ray, Lucas Ursag, etc. Zach Brown's gotten onto this list since we did it earlier in the season with his performance. So I'll just kind of go list guy by guy and list what they did this season. Get some comments from farm director Tom Flanagan, his thoughts on those guys and how they did. And we'll have that online at some point Tuesday and in the paper Wednesday.
Todd Rosiak, Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering your Milwaukee Brewers. Thanks for joining us, Todd. We'll talk to you again very soon.
JR, always a pleasure, and I'm always glad to provide a ray of sunshine for you and all of our listeners and readers.
You are the sunshiniest member of the Brewers Media Corps. You and Tom Haudricourt together are just, you guys are the best.
If he's the Prince of Darkness, what am I?
I don't know. The Squire of Darkness? Is that unfair to you?
I like that. That I can go with that. The Squire of Darkness. That's good.
Okay. Thanks again, Todd. We'll talk soon.
All right, JR.
Thanks to Todd. Let's chat with Kurt Hoag, my colleague with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's a big Brewers, Brewers analyst, I guess I can call him. I don't quite know what the term is, but follows the team very closely, knows a lot of the ins and outs. And his claim is that Lorenzo Cain is the most valuable player on the 2018 Milwaukee Brewers. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I still think Christian Yelich is the better candidate, the more viable candidate for the National League MVP award, which obviously will get announced after the season. And sort of an interesting watching that race ebb and flow. There was a time where I thought Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals was the slam dunk guy to win that award. But as the Cardinals have fallen out of playoff contention, actually, as of Sunday, they kind of snuck back in. They're battling big time for that second wild card spot for the right, basically, to play the Brewers in the wild card game. He maybe has lost a little bit of luster off his candidacy. Javier Baez of the Cubs is probably the front runner now, although you can't count out Nolan Arenado of the Rockies, Paul Goldschmidt of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Milwaukee Brewers, Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, both guys that deserve some attention. So here is what Kurt and I debated. We recorded this on Wednesday. That's prior to the third win in the Cubs series, as well as the Pirates series. So take that into consideration, and here's our conversation.
Joined now by my fellow in-house Milwaukee Brewers expert, the one and only Kurt Hogue, back again for another special segment here on the Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Kurt, we're talking about MVPs today. You have thoughts on this topic, is my understanding?
Just a few. I have a few thoughts on most topics.
That's true.
Involving baseball.
That's true. We are looking at a team, the Milwaukee Brewers, that have two bona fide candidates for the MVP award, that being Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich, acquired on the same day, January 25th, before this season, and thank goodness for Milwaukee Brewers fans, because they have been pretty important. And now kind of want to talk about which one, if either, has a legitimate chance to win the MVP, which one should win the MVP. I think, Kurt, sort of as a bummer of a spoiler, I think ultimately we think it's still an uphill battle for either one to come away with this award. Am I right?
I think you're right. I mean, you're looking at it at a team that is in the playoff spot right now, but they're not running away with anything. I think if that was the case in terms of how the voters typically vote, that would help them. And it's just such a muddled picture right now with 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. You throw some pitchers in there, it could really go anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. And I don't know who's going to win the award. It looked like Matt Carpenter for a while. Cubs fans will tell you, obviously, it's Javier Baez, even though I don't know if that's the truth either. I think Nolan Arenado is just as good as anybody. Paul Goldschmidt is just as good as anybody. I have no idea which of those guys. Maybe they go pitching. Maybe they surprise us and actually go with an Aaron Nola or a Max Scherzer. I think Scherzer's probably the better bet at this point. But the Brewers, I mean, I guess Christian Yelich could sneak in there. It's such a balanced year. And the overall leader in WAR is going to have a much lower number than what typically is true in the National League. It's possible that they sneak in there, and it's going to be a really close vote, and maybe one of them rises at the top.
Yeah, the National League MVP race is interestingly very similar to the playoff race. There's a bunch of candidates, a bunch of teams all vying for a few spots. It's a close race. There's really no clear leader. And you kind of mentioned those pitchers. I think that if there weren't the three, if there weren't DeGrom, Nola, and Scherzer all pretty equal, even for the Cy Young,
totally,
one of those guys might win the They might win the MVP if it was an obvious choice, but there's three of them, and
yeah,
they're going to steal votes from each other.
I totally agree. When Clayton Kershaw won, it was because he was the singular most dominant pitcher in the NL. Verlander, same way in the AL. So let's take a look at Yelich and Cain, because they are our two. We'll talk about some other guys who might at least merit some mention, but these are the two guys that are best suited to get some votes for the MVP award. I'm going to go first because I think Christian Yelich is going to be – I don't know if he's necessarily more deserving. I think you may have convinced me that Lorenzo Cain still gets that award in our unofficial vote tally. But he's the one who has a chance to win more so than Lo Cain. And the reasons are, I think, fairly obvious. You get the second half. The big second half that he's had is certainly going to be something people look at. He's fourth in runs created, second in WOBA, which I know is a value that you love. Sixth in slugging, second in batting average if you're an old school guy. You know, he's almost caught up to Lorenzo Cain in overall WAR going into, if you look at FanGraphs, it's 5.4 to 5.3. Lorenzo Cain leading the National League in WAR and Christian Yelich right there. Again, those are pretty low numbers for the guy that ultimately leads the National League in WAR. If you look at the last six or seven, I think seven position players in the NL to win the MVP, they've all led the league in WAR except for Ryan Braun, actually, in 2011. Matt Kemp got him there, and we will not discuss that again. But that's definitely a statistic that people look at now. That's not just a fancy futuristic statistic. People actually look at that to consider who the best player is. And with Yelich being so close to Cain, I start to think maybe he's a guy who's got an edge. He's not quite as close. in Baseball Reference's WAR tally, or I might have that in reverse. But in any event, he's definitely breathing down Lorenzo Cain's neck.
He is, and I think the main reason that you're going to have the Christian Yelich MVP case be more prominent, get more steam with voters, is because of the hitting metrics. Defense, Lorenzo Cain is clearly one of the best, if not the best center fielder in the league this year.
He's
from a defensive standpoint.
Amazing.
He makes incredible plays. But that is still more difficult to quantify than if you see a guy hit 25 homers. You can see the runs be directly driven in because of that. I mean, honestly, when you're looking at a guy's stats, you're going to be looking, the first thing you're going to go to is, you know, his on-base percentage, his WOBA, his batting average, you know, his homers, those kind of things. And that is what will spark the Christian Yelich case, the things like the hitting for the cycle, which he did. People forget that.
People don't in Milwaukee. They don't at all forget that. But that does help him in the narrative department.
Yeah, it does. But I go Lorenzo Cain is the MVP.
Yes, I know you do.
Of this team and of the National League as well.
I think it's rare to have a player whose defense is so good that you see it on the field almost every single game. And it isn't even about a diving catch. That's not his style at all. It's that routine fly ball it looks routine because Lorenzo Cain is the one catching it, but it's really at the wall or in the warning track or in the gap, and he gets to it so effortlessly. Let's talk about Christian Yelich's defense. What Fangraphs doesn't like it at all, which surprised me. I watch him anecdotally and think he's a very good defensive outfielder. Am I wrong about that?
I watch him anecdotally. I've actually changed my opinion a bit as the season has gone on. At the beginning of the season, I was like, these numbers are completely wrong. Christian Yelich is an amazing defender. You see that he has the Gold Glove, I believe.
Yep.
And I think he's average. His arm is fine, not great.
His arm is
accurate.
Exactly.
It's accurate, but it's not,
but not strong. I agree with you.
And his range is fine. He breaks solidly to balls. He's pretty good going back. He seems to be better going in on to make catches. But he's also not playing a premium position like Lorenzo Cain is in center field.
That's true.
That does diminish his value a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've sort of seen, I wouldn't say my opinion has changed, but he's definitely not as elite a defender as I thought he was, but still good enough that you don't count that against him. It's not like he's a butcher in the outfield by any means.
No.
And then we go back, I mean, we haven't even talked about just the straight up counting stats, but Yelich, you know, with his 380 on base, that's not as good as Cain's 401, but he's got Cain in every other category. I mean, 28 home runs to 10, 86 RBIs to 35, you know, 146 to 123. I'm drawing a blank. What's the stat? That's the OPS plus, right? So I think it's he's just so much better. And I mean, there are not MVPs with just 10 home runs. Like, that's just not a thing. It should be, maybe, but there just aren't many MVPs who don't crush the ball and really rack up some offensive statistics. And Cain's value is almost hidden offensively because of the way he sets the table for that offense.
It's just too bad that he's going to get knocked for only having 10 homers, because realistically, Lorenzo Cain is probably not going to even be in the top five.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
And in a way,
don't you want that? If you think Yelich could contend for this in a tight race, don't you kind of want to throw your support behind one guy, because those guys are so inextricably linked that you could totally see them just splitting their votes, right?
I mean, maybe, but Prince Fielder was third when Braun won in 2011.
No, that's true. So, that's a good point. You're right. So maybe
if you're trying to think of how the voters vote, I don't know if that matters as much. The one voter that I think we both have ties to in the past is Adam McAlvey, and he says the way he's told me that he votes is at the end of the year he just pulls up a bunch of leaderboards and just picks the top guys in a bunch of categories that he looks like, and I don't necessarily know if that's indicative of how everyone does it, but he's not really interested in two guys from the same team in that hurting anybody.
Sure. But then again, it's about numbers. I mean, and it has to be. You only get to see one team play all year if you're covering a baseball team, and that's who's voting, or the writers.
Right.
So that's a really tough thing. And I think people respect Cain's leadership, and Yelich's for that matter, and where they, you know, where they've taken this Brewers team and his defense. But I don't know. I don't know if that'll translate. So let's talk about something a little bit similar. Trying to pinpoint the five guys that the Brewers team can't live without. The five guys, if it were Brewers MVP, how the voting would go. Let's say Cain and Yelich, I think we agree, are one and two. Maybe not. We don't know which order exactly.
Oh, I know which order.
Yes,
Cain,
I know.
Cain's one, Yelich
I go
two.
Yelich one, Cain two. But who's 3, 4, 5? Because there's like seven guys you could point to for the rest of these spots. Who are the guys that the Brewers just cannot live without in your mind?
I want to put Josh Hader third, and I think that is what my gut goes
with.
Oh,
man, I'm putting Josh Hader third.
I have seen some compelling arguments for Jeremy Jeffress just in terms of sheer availability. in turn, he's pitched in what, probably 65 games, 60 games by this point.
Yeah.
I'm assuming their innings limits or their innings numbers are fairly similar at this point. But it's just tough to go against Josh Hader's sheer dominance, the strikeout numbers that he has. I think Jeremy Jeffress has benefited a little more from defense and a little bit of luck as well in terms of fly balls and ground balls just not going over the fence or not sneaking through.
Sure.
So I'll go Josh Hader third.
I mean, I would do the same. You're right. The strikeout ratios that Hader is posting is borderline historic, and he's just somebody that teams cannot account for. Like, you saw what he did against the Cubs on Monday night when he struck out all six batters he faced, some of the very best hitters in the National League. And Jeffress, whom I really do appreciate, who's had a phenomenal year, he's not going to do that. No one's going to do that. That was just something that is singularly special to the Milwaukee Brewers, that what Josh Hader brings to the table. So I definitely put him third. And then fourth and fifth, I don't know if we're going to agree on the next two guys. Who you got after that?
Well, first, I was incorrect about Jeremy Jeffress and Josh Hader's BABIP. Josh Hader is a 205 BABIP. That is
remarkable.
Their home run fly ball rates are similar.
Which is interesting, because when you see people hit him, it's not like they're hitting dribblers, or it doesn't seem like it. It seems like they're pounding the ball pretty well. You'd think it would be higher than that. Maybe not. Maybe they're hitting it right at people, I guess.
I mean, it's tough. He was 233 last year, so he's clearly a guy that does not get squared up, but there's a little bit of
Luck there.
Luck going on there.
Sure.
So I'm going to say Josh Hader's third, but I'm not as strong on that as my Kane take. Number four, I'm going to go Travis Shaw.
Okay.
I think this is a guy that's a little bit slept on by Milwaukee, by fans, by media, in terms of the fact that, you know, I think people appreciate Travis Shaw, but they don't appreciate him. I think he's a little bit overlooked, is
sure.
what I'm trying to say. It's a guy that has, what, about like a 120, 125 WRC plus this year while playing a solid third base. He hits for power. And now apparently he plays second base too. 116 WRC plus, excuse me. So a bit of a down year, but he's also got a 240 BABIP. So that's...
Yeah, I think you see his batting average, and some people are turned off by that. At this point, he's not a guy... He's not a guy who, I mean, plays every day anymore. He obviously plays the majority of the time, but it's sort of an interesting case. We both discussed how you look at the BABIP and you think, man, 2019 with Travis Shaw, like, that guy is still a cornerstone of this offense. As good as this offense has gotten across the board, Travis Shaw might be huge in 2019, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Fangraphs has him at third on the offense in WAR. At three,
wow,
three wins,
a
ballpark of three wins going into the weekend.
That
now,
just stuns me.
Now, I mean, most listeners are some listeners are probably aware of this. WAR is not an exact metric; it's calculated by various websites using different metrics and different weights that they put on things to evaluate what a guy's approximate worth is. So he's around three wins, which is still
That's still good.
Pretty good.
I would not put Travis Shaw in my top five. At some point, I think you have to make room for Yuli Chacin. Not necessarily. I'm gonna admit more narrative than anything else here. The guy came in as a free agent acquisition. He was not necessarily thought of in the same vein as a lot of the other pitching acquisitions this offseason, not by a long shot. And he's outperformed almost them all. And even the Jake Arrieta deal, at this point you would say he's fine, but he hasn't been worth the amount of money that Philly forked over to get him. And then you look at Chacin, and the bargain, the match of production to bargain is just incredible. So he's a guy that the Brewers can, they actually will be able to make additional moves going forward, because they signed somebody as effective as those guys that everybody wanted, certainly more effective than Darvish, Cobb, and Lance Lynn, the other guys, the other premier free agent acquisitions, and has emerged as the steadiest guy in that starting rotation, which is full of question marks. And let's, even now, as decent as the Brewers' playoff positioning is, they have a rotation full of question marks.
Yeah, he's been the anchor. He's been the stabilizer all year long. One of the biggest things with him has been his availability. It's kind of the same thing with Jeffress. He's pitched 31 games. That's tops, one of the top, if not the top, in the National League after his start on Tuesday night, was that? Yeah, Tuesday night. And if you're going to go with the narrative, yeah, he's been one of the five keys to the season, I guess.
For sure, yeah.
But I don't know if he's been one of the five best players, which is kind of what I'm...
Yes, I totally understand.
Also, a side note, Jeremy Jeffress has stranded 93% of runners on base
this
year.
That's not even possible.
Which is...
What is average? Is average like it's about
74, 75.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
So
that's incredible.
Way higher than everyone else.
And also, like you said, a measure of luck. I mean, he's not going to do that. That's not the type of thing that people sustain, right, over the course of several seasons? Or am I wrong about
that? I mean,
that?
Guys can prove, it's similar to BABIP with pitchers, they can prove to be above league average,
sure,
and like have exercise some skill over it. Like if you get more strikeouts.
Well, sure, right. But then, like we said, Jeffress isn't.
And less homers, and Jeffress does get more strikeouts than the average Joe, but you would expect a guy like Josh Hader, whose number is above league average at 79.4%, you would expect Hader to be one of the top guys. And that is through the roof. 80% is still
very good.
Very high. But it's also, it's a measure of luck and how hits are strung together against you.
My number five guy would be Jesus Aguilar, and I obviously he's fallen off a little bit to that crazy bar he set for himself in the first half, but the galvanizing impact he's had to be a guy that they did not think they were going to keep at first coming out of spring training, to the point where in the first half, if the halves were reversed, Jesus Aguilar would absolutely be an MVP candidate. We'd be talking about how this guy came on strong and has passed 30 home runs and is crushing the ball. Is he a guy that could be replaced at first base? I think you could argue they could have lived more so than they could with some of these other guys that we're mentioning. But oh man, has he been a surprise and of great, much greater value than anybody could have anticipated.
Yeah, that first half was just insane, and now we're seeing the numbers come back as I think we expected. I'm not sure if I would put him in my top five.
That's an impressive Brewers team we got here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not as a knock on Aguilar as much as it is a comment on the rest of the team.
Right.
I would probably go Chacin five. Okay. So your boy, Ulys. He's been the best pitcher. We've talked enough about him, but Aguilar has come back a bit to earth, and it's what we expected. You don't sustain that kind of production for an entire half unless you're Mike Trout.
That's true. So Jeremy Jeffress, not in our top five and still unquestionably very good at what he does. Ryan Braun, who's had a good year, isn't in there. I mean, there are a lot of quality players on this team that we are not even putting in our top five. That's a promising sign for the Milwaukee Brewers.
It is. It's a team with a bunch of very good players. A bunch of good players and then also a bunch of very good players as well, especially once you add Moustakas and who we think Jonathan Scope is in the long haul. Their entire lineup is deep. You know, they've got a solid bullpen and such.
All right. Well, that'll do it, Kurt. And I'm very glad that you came back to the podcast a second time. This is pretty exciting.
I'm here to talk about 2008 and most valuable
MVP
players.
Candidate.
Yes, that's me.
All right, let's move into a conversation with Brandon Woodruff, who maybe he'll be on our list next year of top five because, you know, he could be in the starting rotation next year. A lot of one of many options for the starting rotation next year. Sat down with him to talk about his career. He had a really interesting moment, or a tragic moment actually, 2 years ago when his brother was killed in an ATV accident while he was in the minor leagues. He came back from from his time off and hit a home run in his first game back, which obviously being a pitcher is surprising in its own right, but he was very, very open about talking about that. Really an interesting guy, and enjoyed talking to him. Here is Brandon Woodruff. My guest is Brandon Woodruff, right-handed pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. Brandon, every time I talk to a pitcher, the first thing I like to ask them about if they have a home run at the plate, what that experience was like. That happened for you earlier this year in Pittsburgh. And that was a bomb. I mean, was there ever a point in your career where you thought maybe you'd be a hitter as you got advanced in baseball, or was it always going to be pitching and hitting was just second?
Growing up, that was the first thing I did was hitting growing up. And when I first got recruited to go to college, that's what I got recruited to do was to hit. But I could always throw hard, I guess.
Sure.
And but then, you know, once I showed them that, it kind of. I got to college and I realized how hard hitting was.
Yeah.
And knew that, you know, pitching was probably going to be in my future. So, I just stuck with that. But, I could always – I know how to swing a bat, you could say. It's not like I've never picked up a bat before. So that's kind of been my little journey with that, I guess.
It's been obviously a crazy year for you going back and forth to Colorado Springs with roles changing. Was there a point this year where you started to finally feel comfortable with that? Was it maybe it wasn't hard to begin with, and maybe not? Maybe it was always kind of a challenge.
I think the first couple times it was a little difficult just because I'd never done it. But I'd gotten used to it, and I realized that hey, this is probably be my role.
Yeah.
and I'm going to do whatever I can to come up here and help the team win and contribute because, you know, we're looking to go to the playoffs, and I'm going to do whatever I can to help the team win. And if that meant going to the bullpen and starting some too, you know, that's so be it.
How did pitching in Colorado Springs impact you either this year or maybe long term? I know that's a tough venue for a lot of people.
You know, it can be tough to throw there at times, you know, but it really makes you command the fastball. If you don't have command of the fastball, it can get away from you in a hurry up there. But I think it teaches you to be mentally strong as well as to be able to command the baseball a little bit better. So I think, you know, a couple of those things helped me out.
What was it like being a part of that team, knowing that franchise was leaving? That was kind of, I know that's not really impacting you personally necessarily, but that's sort of a weird thing for the Sky Sox fans that you're around every day, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's I don't think they were happy about the AAA leaving.
No, I'm sure they weren't. No.
You know, we had a good time there, and but you know, sometimes that's I guess the business side of it, and we just got to do what we got
to
do.
Yeah, that's a weird facet to the baseball business. So you went in the 5th round out of high school, and ultimately got taken in the 11th round out of college. I wonder how you look at that, because on the one hand, you know, you went to college and then slid a little bit, but also you're in the big league, so it probably works out for the best.
Yeah, you know, I think college was pretty important to me at the time, you know, in high school, and I don't think I'd be, you know, where I'm at today if I didn't go to college.
Sure.
And you know, even though I fell in the draft, I had some injury issues at school and just didn't really pitch that much and just needed to get out and pitch. And the Brewers, you know, took an opportunity on me in the 11th round, and I just tried to make the most of it. And I think by going to college, it helped me grow up and helped me mature and to get me ready for pro ball.
Cool. You're in Biloxi in 2016, and your brother is killed in an ATV accident. Mm-hmm. How important at the time, you were in your home state at the time, how important was that? I imagine that had to help.
No, it was with my friends and family, and being in Biloxi, my, you know, my college roommates and friends, I had a lot of, you know, friends down there, so everybody was real supportive, and just being back home, I had a lot of support, you know, just going around in the Southern League, it was an easy drive for my family, so it was... Yeah. That was huge.
Give me a sense of what Blake was like. I understand he was a really good baseball player as well.
He was. He played junior college at home, and if he didn't have a couple injuries with his arm, he probably would have went and played at Delta State in Mississippi. He was a third baseman. He could pitch a little bit too. Very hard worker. I think that's kind of where I got it from in baseball. He kind of taught me everything that I know, and just growing up and you know, going to the field with him all the time and practicing with him when I was really little, you know, he helped me grow as a baseball player. And you know, I think I have to credit a lot of my success to him because he's the one who kind of, you know, I followed around.
So you come back, and then I think it's that first game you hit another home run at the plate. Tell me about that moment. That had to be something.
That was something that kind of comes out of off a movie screen. You know, it's I was gone for I think 10 days, and I kept throwing while I was at home. And when I got to, it was Pensacola, they asked me if I wanted to take some more time off, and I told them no, that I was, you know, ready to go. So that first game coming back, it was kind of weird feeling. But, it, you know, after, I think we got through three innings maybe, or got to the third inning, and both pitchers, we, you know, had a no-hitter going, both of us.
Yeah.
I step up and, you know, hit. The wind was blowing in 20 miles an hour, so balls weren't going anywhere.
Holy smokes.
I ended up hitting one out, and so, you know, that was a pretty cool moment, and ended up winning the game 1-0, and I think I went like 6 or 7 innings, so it was pretty cool.
Awesome. So then you come to you get to the big leagues, you have kind of an infamous non-debut, you get injured in the bullpen and a way to make your first start.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can look back on that and laugh about it a lot more now than you could then, but what do you remember about that day and those moments?
Yeah, just, I think I remember, you know, just obviously getting up and getting to the field so early because it was a doubleheader and I was pitching the first game and just sitting around waiting. And I think that was the worst part about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just going out for the first time, coming out of the dugout and just being in a Major League Baseball stadium and, you know, knowing that you're about to make your debut was a pretty cool feeling. And then I was going through my stretches and got about halfway through my stretches and I knew I did something wrong. Something wasn't right. And, you know, ended up pulling my hamstring, and which was very unfortunate. It was a crazy day of emotions, going from, you know, being really excited to almost wanting to throw up walking back into the dugout. But you know, I think everything kind of happens for a reason. I think that helped prepare me for my debut in Tampa Bay, and because, you know, I slept better the night before. I knew what it was until I actually, you know, threw a ball in a game. So, you know, I think that just helped me calm the nerves a little bit for that day.
What's the interim like between that, you know, the time you go on the DL and then that start? Because you got to be thinking, I'm guessing, I wish I were out there. I should be out there.
Yeah, you know, that was tough because it wasn't anything arm-related. It was obviously with my hamstring. So I'm rehabbing in Arizona, and it's, you know, it's blistering hot, and I'm thinking, man, I may not ever get out of here. And just, you know, all the things go through your head. You know, maybe I missed my opportunity or whatever it may be. And, you know, finally got healthy, made some rehab starts, and then, you know, they called me back up on August 4th. And, you know, thankfully that debut went the way that I wanted it to.
Yeah, exactly. All right, last question. I got to ask about your beard. One day it was very large, very red beard, and the next day it was gone.
I know.
And it was, I think, the most jarring beard loss in Brewers history.
I know.
I'm sure you heard
it
about it.
It was just a, I don't know. We got back from a road trip here, and we got back into Milwaukee, and I was just like, man, I don't know. I wasn't throwing the ball the way I wanted it to. You know, it's kind of superstition. Baseball players are kind
of
superstitious.
Of course, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take it off. I'm just going to start over and take it off. And my wife kind of liked the beard a little bit, and then, you know, once I took it off, she couldn't get used to seeing a clean face.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did that, and then I've got it to now to where it's neatly groomed and stuff, so I'm going to try to just keep it where it is. I don't think I'm going to grow it back out.
Yes, it is a relief to see that it's back, at least in
part. A little bit. Yeah, it makes seem somewhat normal, I guess.
All right, Brandon, thanks so much.
Cool.
That will once again do it for the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Join me next week. I got an interview with one of the newest Brewers, Curtis Granderson, and enjoyed chatting with him for quite a bit. So that's going to be coming up on next week's podcast. Hopefully we're continuing to talk about the playoffs and what the Brewers can expect going forward in a context where it doesn't sound like you know, we have to worry about whether or not that's going to happen. Right now, playoff odds, very favorable, 99% or 98%. According to FanGraphs and Baseball Reference. So that's still very promising. Please make sure to find us on Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating and a review. Let us know what you think. Find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. And give me a shout out. Let me know what you'd like to see on the podcast. And obviously ratings and reviews in Apple Podcasts help, but you can find us on Stitcher and Google Play as well, or at jsonline.com, where you can find all of our content related to the Milwaukee Brewers. Buckle up for these last 2 weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we will be enjoying the ride, and I will catch you next week. Thanks.